Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
This has been requested by none other than Mandy herself. Hey, hey, hey. We're back. We're back. We're back. We're back. We're brown. We're back and we're ambitious. Welcome to Brown Ambition, y'all.
It's like the title says. Brown Ambition. Check and check. Yeah. Well, how are you? How is your week going?
It's going good. The weather has finally broken, I'm hoping, and it's been nice. Like, I don't know. Like, at night, I'm always like, do I turn on the heat still? Because I always wake up freezing, but during the day, it's really warm. So I'm just excited because I'm just looking forward to, like, a nice spring summer.
I know. Today, I wore sandals and a sundress. It was like, it's like the good weather followed me home from Savannah.
Yeah, it was that kind of weather. And it was freaky because I was like, wait, do I trust it? Or is it, like, at 3 o'clock going to turn ugly?
You know, because New York is moody.
Yeah, it's very. Sidebar, I had such good sushi for lunch today. I know it's so random, but, like, I just had a flashback. I was like, oh, that was so good.
I have food. I, too, have food flashbacks. I respect that. I know how that feels. Like, I'm still thinking about this dinner I had at this Cuban restaurant in Hoboken, like, maybe 6 weeks ago. I'm like, damn, that sea bass was good.
That's like when we had our Brown Ambition 1 year anniversary. And we had it at POPO. Oof, food. Yummers. Mm-hmm. Oh, sidebar. Today's my anniversary.
So many sidebars. Congrats.
I forgot. So Superman came into the room. Meanwhile, it's like 4. And I'm like laid out in the bed. Like, he's like, hey, somebody forgot a special day. I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, okay, his birthday is August 3rd. And I'm looking at him, what is he talking about? Then he started singing, do you know what today is? I was like, ah! He was like, you forgot.
Technically, do you keep celebrating it after you get engaged? Because we kind of stopped.
Yeah, because I'm like, it doesn't really, I mean, meanwhile, how we came up with it was so whack because I remember we were dating and, you know, I kind of was like, so, you know, what are we doing? You know, I'm looking for something more serious. And he was like, oh, you know, I am too. But, you know, at the time we were both kind of like dating, not just each other, but mostly just each other. So he was like, well, can you give me till April 11th to clean up my mess? And I was like, so now that's our anniversary. So I'm what? Like, forgive me for not remembering such a romantic occasion.
What is this mess? The mess of the trail of broken hearts he would leave in his wake?
I'm like, guys are so extra because all I had to do was make a phone call and be like, yeah, so, you know, we're just friends now. And I'm like, what do you have to clean up? But anyway, so that's how the 11th was chosen. So I'm like, you know what? It's not all that special to me. But it's a shame because I don't remember dates. He remembers the day we got engaged. I'm not going to lie. I don't. It was in October sometime because that's my birthday. But I came downstairs from a nap and I saw flowers on the table. And I was like, oh, my God, whose flowers are these? He just looked at me like Tiffany. I was like, I mean, yes, thank you.
Today? Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was so sweet.
It's also my best friend Vivian's birthday, so I got to give her a little shout out. And she's also one of my – oh, go ahead. Shout out. Commence.
Hey, Viv.
So she was one of my bridesmaids. So I felt like I really didn't want to forget her birthday. So I bought her something like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 weeks ago when I had it delivered. It arrived like over, I think, the time I was away, and I
totally forgot that I bought her something. Like, has that ever happened to you? Like, I ordered it, I had a plan, and then she mentioned it or something, like, during the weekend, and I was like, holy crap, I forgot about her birthday. I was like, what am I gonna do? What can I get her? What does she like? Man, I like these earrings. Wait. And it just took me forever to remember that I already bought her something. Like, I had, like, wedding brain.
I'm sure she was surprised, like, oh my gosh.
Well, I haven't given it to her yet because I think she needs I think she needs a little break from me, so I'm giving her a few days. But then I'm going to lure her with a treat to come get her present, and then, like, just so I can hang out with her some more. But I try. You know, you try. I think it's important. I think birthdays are nice. I think it's nice to give birthday gifts because no one really does it when you're a grown up. It's like, let me take you for a drink and let me, you know, take you to lunch. But it's, I don't know. I think it's sweet to get a little present. So that's happening.
So this is a special episode, right? Because of Brown Ambition, we're going to be doing some Q&A.
This is the episode you've all been waiting for, because if you have been sending your question in, you're like, man, why haven't they read my question yet? They suck. They don't tell the truth. they didn't pick my question. I'm giving up. This show is for you, because I am cleaning out my inbox, cleaning it out, and we are taking your questions.
And we're going to take them all episode. That's what we're just going to focus on. So if you're looking for us to, like, you know, we're not going to be breaking or boosting. We're going to be questioning and answering.
Q&A. So this should inspire you. I'm cleaning out the inbox. It means once we finish, I'm going to need more questions. So if you want to send us a question, head on over to brownambitionpodcast.com. Click the tab that says Ask Us Anything. You can fill out a question right there. It goes straight to our inbox. Or if you don't trust the internet, you can just email us directly at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. I don't trust those little boxes. Is that weird? Like,
you don't?
I don't like them. I don't think they're ever going to get there.
I like it. Well, this is what I see people do, because I, you know, I have a contact me box for, like, my website, and people will, because you typically have to type in your email, they'll constantly, like, misspell their own email address, so when you hit reply it bounces back, and I'm like, ugh, like, now I have to try to guess, like, what the incorrect spelling was, like, oh, you forgot, it's not .con, C-O-N, it's .com, that's why it bounced back.
Well, they don't deserve a question, then. They don't deserve an answer. Take your time. I just don't like not being able, I don't like not knowing who I'm emailing, like, their actual address, so I can, like, send follow-ups. Maybe just because I'm a reporter and, like, I need answers quickly. And I feel like the comment boxes, it takes a while. You know, it's going to get dumped somewhere. But you guys should know that I read every email, and I read it, you know, well. And we pick the questions we think are most interesting. So your questions will get read eventually. So again, brownambitionpodcast.com or brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com to send us your questions.
Let's get started. First question.
Without further ado, tonight's first question comes from listener Nicole. She says, this is my second question to you all. Okay, Nicole, and you're just being greedy now. Yeah. and I've read your name, so it's too late. I got to answer it, but I don't know if I would have if I knew.
My man, Nicole, you got that.
It's okay. We're going to start charging on the third question, though. That's the trick. Nicole says, I wanted to know if I'm allowed to open an IRA with an outside company like Vanguard or Fidelity if I'm already investing in my employer's retirement program. My job offers a 403b plan with a 3% match, but I'm not a fan of the company the plan is through. The funds aren't that great. However, I'm not giving up free money, so I invested enough to get the match to the 401b and a smaller amount into the Roth IRA. I'm going to roll over my old retirement accounts from previous jobs and considered opening an additional IRA through the same company, probably Vanguard. However, I'm unsure if this is allowed, and I heard that depending on the amount, I might not get the full tax-free benefit. Help. I need to read that question again. So basically, I think she's super smart, because a lot of people will blindly just invest in whatever their employer has, whatever plans that they have. But she's made a wise decision. I think if you look at what actually your plan is invested in, and you're not happy with the holdings, or you're not happy with the diversification, or the, you know, the historical performance of those funds, and you want to invest outside of it, it's absolutely possible, definitely, 100% allowed. And I, my first piece of advice would have been to say, you know, with that 3% match, you should definitely at least put in enough money to capture it. For sure.
Yeah.
Which is, it looks like Nicole says she's already doing that. So that's like two smart things right off the bat. She says, I'm going to roll over my old retirement accounts from previous jobs and considered opening an additional IRA through the same company. So it sounds like she's already opened a Vanguard account outside of her employment plan, her 403B plan. So she's already got a side IRA, and now she wants to consider rolling over old retirement accounts from previous jobs into that outside IRA. I'm not sure if that's allowed, she says.
Well, that's smart. I guess I thought that she was trying to open up a third IRA account.
I'm not sure. It's not really clear. Either she's has a second one and she wants to roll them over, or she has a second one and she wants to open a third one, which isn't necessary. Like, you should be able to roll over your previous employer's IRA just into the IRA you've already opened.
Yep.
Through Vanguard. Because the thing is,
if you switch jobs at any time, you're typically going to have your retirement account that your company has provided. And then if you switch jobs, you're not able to roll over your old job into your new job. You would have to have an outside account, like a Vanguard or Ameritrade or whatever. Rolling over and making sure, you know, some people think, oh, I could just withdraw my money and deposit it. No. You know, you want to make sure that when you roll over, you allow the company. So you would call Vanguard and say, hey, I want to roll over. They're going to send you specific paperwork and they'll roll over for you, because you don't want to withdraw the money and mistakenly increase your income, which would increase your taxes for the year.
Yeah, I think you have to deposit it within 60 days. Because I know one time when I was switching jobs, they cut me a check for my what was ever left in my 401k account, and just mailed me a check. And I was like, oh, okay, what can I do with this? And I almost just like put it in savings. But luckily, I'd asked someone, you know, for advice, and they're like, oh, no, look into it. You have to deposit within 60 days or you'll get taxed on it, which defeats the whole purpose of saving in those accounts.
Yeah. And it's heavily taxed, not some old punk 10%. No. Upwards of, like, I think I got taxed like 30%, something crazy, when I took the money out of my 403B.
When did you do that? Talk about that.
Yeah, when I lost my job, I'd lost my job as a teacher during the recession because my school was a nonprofit-based school and nobody was giving funds anymore. And so at the time, I had moved back home with my parents, got sick of that, moved on my sister's couch. She got sick of me and was like, girl, you got 30 days. And I was like, no. And so I was working on my business at the time, which was making $0. And so I told myself, and I do not suggest this, but I told myself, okay, I'm going to take out the money from my 403B, which is my retirement account. And I think it was, I don't know, maybe like $40,000 or something, or $50,000. I think I vaguely remember getting like $25,000 to $30,000, but they took a significant amount of money. I know they took a significant amount, but I took that money out and I told myself, this is your money for the year. You have a year to get the budget needed to a point where you can actually make money to support yourself. If after this money runs out, the business is not making enough to support yourself, you have to go back and get a job, go back to teaching and get a regular job. And so I literally was down to like my last $100 and I started making money. And I was like, thank you, Jesus. But I took the money out of mine and it was a significant amount of money. And I regret it, honestly. Hindsight's 20/20. I guess I kind of regret it, but then I wouldn't, maybe the budget needs to would not be what it is now. But I lost so much money. And honestly, I wasn't able to, like, I just recently started within the last maybe 5 years, and I'm 37, started contributing to a retirement account. And so I've lost a lot of years.
Yeah, it's so tempting. You know, when I was growing up, when I had heard about 401ks, and by the time I became a financial reporter, to me, like, just from learning from the context, people would usually talk about a 401k. I was like, oh, that's that thing you dip into when you can't afford stuff. Because that's the only time I ever heard someone mention it was like, oh, yeah, I got to dip into the 401k again. Yeah. Like, usually around the time the car breaks down or, you know, you can't afford this or whatever. Not going to name names. But anyway, that was the context. So I like my first job, not my first job, but my first job I was laid off of way too soon to even understand like what their 401k system was. But my next one was up for a startup, and they matched 100% up to 5% of your contributions. I didn't even know enough like to even do that. Like I think I worked there at least a year and a half, and I didn't contribute a penny to my 401k. And I think one time, just for fun and to torture myself, I looked at what I would have made if I had just put in like, you know, 100-200 bucks every paycheck and let that grow. And it wasn't an insignificant sum of money. It was definitely five figures. And that kind of stung, but I learned from my mistakes. You know, I thankfully got into this job. And I would say I started just to encourage, if anyone's out there and thinking, you know, I'm 23 and I barely make enough money to afford my rent, how can I possibly, you know, think about contributing to a retirement account? I really started contributing when I was 24, and I just started with my little, I think I started with like 6%, and then I worked up to 10% eventually, and I'm 29 now. Am I going to put my business out there? Okay, fine. So in the one, and this is even better. So this is the money that I've been saving since I was 24 until last April when I left my job at Yahoo. So this is from two jobs combined over just a period of, let's see, from 24 to 28. So 4 years, I have over $40,000. And not just that, that's only 4 years, but not just that, like I haven't touched that 401k since I left Yahoo. I have a separate, you know, retirement account through my new job. And I haven't rolled it over yet. I just haven't gotten around to it, but I haven't touched it. And I've gained like $6,000 to $8,000 just in the last, like less than a year since I left Yahoo, but just not touching it. And like, we had a great market this year. The market was like really rallying. You know, unfortunately, some of that had to do with our current president. Just a little bit. But even before that, there was a great, like, I think this summer there was a rally sometime in August. And yeah, so I haven't even touched that sucker since I left, and I'm making money. And that is the beauty of compounding interest. And that is why I think that if you were me at 23, 24 and thinking you can't do it, just start. Like, just start anything, you know, and set it and forget it, you know, like I did. I just put my money in target date funds. And yeah, people will say, well, that's not, you know, that's not really, they're not always the best idea. But hell, I wouldn't have $40,000 if I hadn't. I'd much rather. You have
to just start. And two, like Mandy said, honestly, starting with, even if you start with 2%, and then what I used to do is when I first started, because I didn't have a whole lot, I said, okay, I can do 2%. And then every 6 months, I would bump it up a percentage so I could barely feel it. And now, as an entrepreneur, I set aside, I think I'm setting aside, I want to say 20 or 25% of my gross income toward retirement, because I feel like I feel like I'm behind since I just started, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, starting to invest or put money aside for retirement. But, you know, and sometimes, you know, that's what it looks like. And I don't mind. I live off of way less than half of my income because I'm, you know, because I started a little bit late and because I work for myself, you know, and I don't have somebody to match me. But, you know, where you are is not always where you're going to be. So really, wealth is a habit. So starting with 1%, jump from that. I remember one year when I was like, oh, I was able to jump to 5%. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, 6, 7. And then I jumped to 10 and then 15 and then 25. So, you know, but if I never had started at one, then I don't know that I would have ever made it to 25. So to answer Nicole's question, yes, you can roll over. I'm assuming you're not asking to open a third account. You don't need to. You could just roll it over into your current Vanguard account, and you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm. Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
But kudos for like looking for better and looking for more, taking advantage of that match and then looking for something a little bit better. Excellent. So you brought up, you were talking about your entrepreneurship in that first year when you were living out of your off your 401k, Tiffany. So this next question is actually a great segue because it is for Miss Tiffany, Miss Budgetista. She asks, and I don't have an, oh, T, her name is just T. Can you talk about how you took the leap to create your business? Did you always want a business and you pursued that interest, or did you have the idea and interest first? I want the dirty details because I'm honestly sick of the rosy overnight success stories in which no one goes into the actual steps taken towards success. Girl, I feel you.
Yeah, ain't no overnight, bitch.
The good news is that Tiffany's got a great non-rosy overnight success. This is going to hurt.
Yes, it was hard. Okay, so I was a school teacher, preschool teacher. Loved it. And then recession hit, school closed. And it was kind of a, you heard the murmurings, but like really we got the news 3 days before the new school year. So it was really hard because typically in the summer, teachers don't work. You don't work, you don't get paid. So that September, as much as you don't want to go back to school, you're kind of like, yay, my check is coming. And we got to learn that, no, that's not coming ever. No more school. So I was like, yikes. Thankfully, I had money saved because I just was a saver. But I had also made, like that summer, I'd made a big financial mistake. Or I think it was like the year before where I'd invested with a friend and ended up $35,000 in credit card debt. So here I am, no job, a home that I bought maybe a few years before, $35,000 of credit card debt and $50,000 of student loan debt. So I was like basically like $300,000 in debt and no job. And I was like, oh, this is great. So I quickly decided, like I was calling my sister, like, what am I going to do? And she was like, I think you should move back home. So I did. So I moved back home and I rented out my condo to a friend of mine, which was the worst mistake ever because I rented out my condo to him and he promptly proceeded to like never pay rent. So here I was. Yeah. So I thought I was like, okay, at the time I had about a year and a half worth of savings, which I was like, I should be fine. I rent out my condo, make a, you know, and then, and I think I was renting it out for like $200 or $300 more than what my mortgage was. And I said, I have my savings. I'm moving back home. I'm so smart. I'm so good. I'll pay down this credit card debt. So he proceeded not to pay. So I ended up still having to pay my mortgage, I was bleeding money for like a year until I was able to get him out. And by then at some point I had to stop paying my mortgage, which was the hardest thing ever because I had never been late on any bill ever. So here I was like, you know, stop paying my mortgage. My house went into basically like pre-foreclosure. And I was living home and I just turned 30. And I remember being like, wow, this is not flirty 30. This sucks. Because my parents, who are very Nigerian, were like, okay, well, so the rules are still the same. You have to be home by midnight. Oh, midnight at 30.
That's the worst.
Yo, I was like, are you kidding me? My dad was like, and you got to do the dishes on Saturday. And you got to, I was like, yo, my life could not get worse. But it could. Oh, but it could. So I moved back home. It sucked. My parents are awesome. And I didn't have to pay rent or anything. But still, the rules were still the same from when I was like 20. Not even like, you know, 15. And at the time, I didn't know. I didn't have plans for a business. I just said, I knew I didn't want to go back to a job. Truthfully, it's not that I had so much courage. I was pissed. I was pissed and I was afraid because teachers don't lose their job. It's like being a police officer or, you know, like there's certain jobs that you're not supposed to lose. So I thought, well, why would I go back? There's no such thing as job safety. I had the safest job in the world and they let us go 3 days before the new school year. So I refused to enter the job force. So I was like stubborn, even though I had all this debt and all this stuff that I was owing, I had to make a choice between, do I pay my mortgage or do I pay the rest of my bills? And so I decided to let the mortgage go, keep up with the rest of my bills by paying through my savings. And I volunteered everywhere you can think of because I was trying to figure out what's the next stage. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so in volunteering, I always was the go-to person for my friends when it came to budgeting and saving and stuff. And I thought I wanted to become an event planner. So I found myself volunteering at different nonprofits planning events. But while I was there, I ended up teaching, you know, the secretary, the bus boy, the this person, that person. Girl, that's not how you budget. This is how you do it. And people started asking me at the different places where I was volunteering for that help. And then the nonprofit would be like, well, can you teach that to our constituents? And so, especially in my city, Newark, where I live and where I work, that I became like, you know, it started to get out like, oh, you need help with your budget? Ask that girl over there at the nonprofit. And one day my best friend Drina said, you should charge for that. I'm like, charge for what? And she was like, girl, you don't have any money. So I started charging people like $25 to $50 to do their budget with them, which they probably did not want to pay. Like, well, girl, I only have 10. I'm like, we've been at it for 3 hours. $10.
Wait, so Drina, who would one day become your PR rep.
Yes, my publicist. Yeah. And so she, it was really hard, honestly. So I moved out from my parents' house and I moved in with my sister because I just could not take the rules anymore. And I stayed with her for about a year. I told her all I need is a year. And I started making a little bit of money, like, you know, like maybe about $100 to $200 a month. And by then I had gotten my old tenant out and I had a new tenant. And so this is like, this was transformative for me in that my new tenant was paying my mortgage, which was like, well, how much my mortgage was, which is about less than my mortgage, which is about $1,200 a month. But by then I was so behind on my mortgage, over a year behind, they wouldn't take any money from me. They were like, unless you have all the money and all the fees, we don't want any monthly amount from you. So I said, bet, you ain't got to tell me but once. So that $1,200 that's what I lived off of. So my tenant was paying me $1,200 and I didn't give it to the mortgage company. They wouldn't take it. So I was living off of her rent money. So when people were like, oh, you got a business? I was like, yeah, girl. Meanwhile, the business was paying me next to nothing. The rent money is how I survived. And
the foreclosure process, it takes time, right? It can take like years sometimes. Yeah.
It took like 6 or 7 years before they finally took the house and foreclosed.
No way.
So for that long, I was like, but I wasn't collecting for that long, like, because I didn't have a tenant for that. I think I had a tenant for about 2 years. And when I was at my sister's, the tenant was like, okay, I'm buying a house and I'm moving on. And I was like, yikes. So I was down to my last like $100. And my sister was like, you know, you've been here for a year. You said 3 months. It's time for you to go. And I was like, I don't want to go back to mommy and daddy. So I took the money out of my 401k. My 403B, which is my retirement account. And I told myself, Tiffany, you have a year to make this business work. You've been working on it. You've been volunteering. You've been giving. This was about 2009, 2010. You've been from 2008 to 2010. You've been doing everything for free. You have, you know, you have to do something. And so I took the money out and I moved out of her house. I moved into a room in Newark. And if you're not familiar with a room, that's where people go when they come home from jail. And they only have $400 a month. That's what I was living in a room. Thankfully, a friend of mine was like renting a room in this house in Newark, a brownstone. And she was like, you know, the rest of the house is empty. You should rent a room here too. And because we didn't want like, you know, any felons to live with us, we filled it up with other women who were basically like we were struggling. And so it was a house full of awesome would-be entrepreneurs who could only afford about $500 a month. That's how much my room cost to include like all utilities in your little room. So I was paying $500 a month and I stayed in that room for like two and a half years. I already had a car that I had bought for $4,000 when I was like 26, 27. I still had that same car up until last week. Last week. Oh man, I didn't tell you I bought a car. Anyway. We must have. So yeah, I just bought it like last week.
I knew
week.
That, so but I don't. Yeah, I knew it. You had picked out a car and you were going to do it. Isn't it like a Lincoln or?
Yes. 2015 Lincoln MKZ. Hey. But I'm talking about I just bought a car. I've had the same car for over 10 years. And so it was such a struggle because, you know, I didn't know if it was going to work. I mean, I was making it up as I went along. I'd gone to school for business and my concentration was marketing. But honestly, I didn't remember that. I was a preschool teacher for 10 years and I'd gotten my master's in education. So that's what I was good at. I was good at teaching and everything else I made up. Along the way, I still make it up along the way. It was hard. I used to cry all the time because I used to be like, literally every month I started at zero, meaning there was no money on the board every month, meaning how these bills are going to get paid. And throughout the month, you know, I would get like a speaking engagement for $100 and then another thing for $200, another thing for $50 and somehow make most of my bills work. And then the rest I would roll over to the next month. So every month I lived like that for like almost 3 years of not knowing if I was going to be able to pay anything until the business started picking up after, I wouldn't say 2013. So after about 3 years in, it started picking up, and I was consistently making about maybe, I want to say maybe like $1,500 a month, enough to pay bills, enough to, you know, I didn't have like extra, I didn't have a car note or anything like that. So enough to basically sustain myself. And it really wasn't until 2015 that I brought on help, because I was like doing well enough. I was like, okay, you make a little something every month, you know, you could pay yourself. And, but it was just me and I wanted to grow. And I brought on help and I couldn't even, and at the time I had saved, by then I had squirreled away enough money to pay down my credit card debt. I still had my student loan debt. It was in deferment. They had taken the house, so I didn't owe the $250 or whatever the house was worth anymore because they had taken it. And Obama at the time had this like law where if they took your house, you know, they basically erased your debt and you didn't have to pay taxes on the debt that was erased. So I wasn't debt free, but you know, it was just my student loan debt. And I saved enough money to hire somebody for 6 months. Now it was a previous intern, and I told her, you know, I only have 6 months worth of pay, but if you come on board in 6 months, if we put this work in, we can make it work. And so she came on board, and within 6 months, I mean, we quadrupled how much the budget needs to make, but that's recent in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then last year we made like quadruple that. And this year we stand to make about $1 million this year. We've already made $500,000 this year. And so, but like, this is a new thing. This is years in. This is struggle. This is crying. This is by myself. Entrepreneurship is really lonely because it's your baby. You're a single mother when or a single father when you're an entrepreneur. And even though people help you, it's still your baby. And there's no guarantee that it's going to work. And I was not a pure entrepreneur. Some people are like, oh, I just worked on my dream. Yeah, girl, I babysat. I tutored. I did all the stuff on the side to kind of fill in the gaps. Like, I live so simply. I couldn't afford groceries at one point. I used to wait till my parents were away at church and then go raid their freezer. Like, ooh, they don't need all this chicken. Ain't nobody, don't nobody even live here like this.
God, I miss those days.
I used to go to events. Man, I used to go to events like, wait, they got food? And then we would go late and be like, so what you guys going to do with all this food at the end?
Oh, you were because that person. We need- Yeah. Not surprising. Where are all those Yahoo snacks you stole over the years?
Yes, exactly. I used to, when me and Mandy used to tape in Yahoo, I used to be like, so where are the, where
y'all had a dark chocolate cherry kind bars this week? Lame. Really disappointing. Really disappointing. I like those dark cherry chocolate.
So like, yeah, so it was difficult and it was hard. And I would say it's really the last, I want to say 2 or 3 years that business has really done well. But it was definitely not easy, and it's still not easy, even though, you know, we do well in business. It's still hard because, you know, there's still expectations to manage. It's harder now that as business does better, how do I manage, you know, my personal life as well as my business and making sure that Superman is good. And I still see my niece and my nephew and I call my sisters and I, you know, there's more things on my plate, but, I'm not broke anymore. And I'm
Oh, go ahead. I was going to ask, you know, $500,000, $500,000 sounds like a lot of money. But when you're a business owner, you're also, you know, the more you grow, the more expensive it gets to run, I guess. And how are you sort of managing that, like at the same time, keeping an eye to your profit while like trying to grow at the same time?
So honestly, I was doing terrible until literally, I want to say we just hired. I had an accountant that I would see every quarter to do my taxes, but I knew something was off because the numbers will always be off. Literally, I just hired a new executive assistant and she has her MBA in accounting because my accountant was somebody who was big picture. Whatever I gave to him is what he worked with. I said, I need someone to look at the stuff I'm giving to him because I'm doing something wrong. And I was accounting. I got a D in accounting. I'm not even gonna lie. in college. And I was doing it all. I mean, I wasted so much. I mean, tens of thousands of dollars. And this is just recent. Like I said, I still make so many mistakes. So she, her name is Rachel, and I have been working through the finances of the business because running a business, I know how to teach. I could be the budgetista and I can manage my personal finances. It's totally different, your business finances. And I was getting it wrong. And it's so crazy because working with Rachel, I finally get to see what it feels like when people work with me with their personal finances and they're like, oh my God, because that's what I feel like with her every day. So for the last 2 weeks, every day, we've been like basically unearthing all of the mess that I've created. And just to see the light on the other tunnel. And I'm like, oh, that's on the wrong line. And this is why I was paying too much in taxes. And this is why, and before, you know, if I hired somebody, I'd be like, yeah, I guess we can afford to pay them $15 an hour. I wouldn't know. And I felt like I was making a ton of money, but I wasn't seeing it. And it's because I was accounting incorrectly and I was just paying out too much. And so, yeah, so that's still something so new to me. So entrepreneurship is constantly, it's hard because you're constantly evolving, but you have to want to. Every year I set aside a personal goal for the business. So this year it's all about get that money right, like behind the scenes. And so last year it was like, oh, we were opening up the academy. And before that, it was like we had a Live Richer challenge. And that was the first time we did a challenge. And so every year we usually have, like, I usually have a main project that I'm working on. And this year it's really all about the behind the scenes finances. And that's all you can do is try your best to do your best. And then when you realize you're doing something wrong, ask for help. So what I would suggest to anybody who's wanting to be an entrepreneur is, one, you have to be willing to be wrong all the time. Like, we make mistakes all the time. Me and Sierra, my COO, she used to be my intern and now she's my COO. We giggle all the time. We're like, yo, girl, we are a mess. That is not even the right email we're supposed to send out to our list of 300,000. Or like, we sent out a link and I'm like, the link's not working. Nobody checked the link. Darn it. Now we got to send out an oops email. And then an oops on top of the oops email. And so those things happen. But you learn, one, not to take yourself so seriously. Two, ask for help. That was a mistake that I made, that it took me too long to ask for help. And now that I ask for help, it's helped so much because we've grown so much. If I would have asked for help, I could have saved, like I said, tens of thousands of dollars in taxes and the mistakes that I was making. Because, I mean, like, at one point we paid an extra $30,000 in taxes because of a mistake I made. Ooh. And I was like,
did you get that back?
No, because it wasn't a mistake that I could change. It was, like, the way you set up your business, like, if you're an LLC versus a S-Corp, like, that differentiation matters when it comes to taxes. And I took it lightly, and I didn't listen to my accountant, and I waited too long to make the switch. And he was like, well, you know, the good news is you made the switch. The bad news is you waited so long, you owe the government $30,000. I was like, wait, beans? $30,000? Wait, ducats? Dollars? But I can laugh about it, because at the end of the day, I'm healthy, and I'm happy, and you make mistakes, and you do better. But yeah, entrepreneurship, like I said, I hope that I was able to illustrate that it has not been an easy road, but it has been so rewarding because I decided a long time ago to live a life of service. And when all else fails, I have it on my wall. You are living a life of service. So as long as I stay true to that, then the $30,000, the money made, the money lost, the mistakes made, they don't mean as much as long as I know that someone is being helped by the fact that I have this business. And I know that to be true. And so, you know, that helps keep me moving, because money doesn't, you know, although it's great, it doesn't keep you warm at night. It doesn't, you know, like, having more hasn't made me happier. You know, what's made me happier is family and foundation. For the longest time, I was by myself. I was working. I had no boo. I had to finally stop and say, Tiffany, what are you doing? Are you gonna be a rich old lady alone? No kids, no boo? So I took a step back and I said, no, I'm going to open myself up. And now I have Superman and we're going to get married. And that means more to me. If that meant less money, because I have to cook dinner. Well, I don't have to, but I cook dinner. We hang out. So that means that's less time for my business. Could I make more if I spent less time with him? Yes. But would that make me a better person or make me happier? No. So, you know, that's the part of entrepreneurship that to me is the hardest, is the balance. But I say, you know, go for it, but go for it knowing that it's not easy and that you don't have to be a pure entrepreneur, that you can have your side hustles on the side until your business makes money.
I think that's really important. I mean, not just to hear the dirty behind, like, the success and all that, but just to understand what someone went through to achieve their success and then decide for yourself, am I willing to do, you know, certain things to achieve that level of success? And is entrepreneurship even something I can manage, you know? It's so difficult. It takes so much of your life. You may not be in a place where you can sacrifice what it takes to sacrifice. You know, no, if you have children, if you have a parent that you're caring for, those types of things. And I'm not going to lie, a lot of times women are the people who those types of responsibilities fall on. So, and you know, not beating yourself up because, you know, oh, I don't own my own business, or I, you know, maybe I want to, but I can't seem to get to the next level. Sometimes there's, you know, there's personal things in your life that may be, maybe standing in the way, or there's barriers standing in the way. And it's nice to hear, like, you know, it's nice to hear you say too, that you've made a conscious choice to sacrifice, but to an extent. Like you find yeah. you've sort of figured out what you're comfortable with giving up and what you're not comfortable with giving up.
And still the trade-offs that I don't know if it's worth it. Like I'm 37 now and I'm like, dang, there's a possibility I might not be able to have kids, you know? And I'm like, dang, that's something that, you know, I wasn't consciously trading in, but I'm like, yikes. I mean, we're trying, but there's no guarantee, you know, once you get past a certain age, it's just that much harder mm-hmm. to get pregnant. So that's something where I have to acknowledge, like, dang, you know, was it worth it, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I never had, like, this huge urge until, and not even now. I mean, I want to have kids, but it's not like, you know, some women are like, you know, the mommy clock is ticking loud. And for me, it's ticking now, but it wasn't ticking at 31, 32, 35 even, you know? So those are things that you have to, like, acknowledge that, you know, I've learned this, that you can't have it all. Don't let people fool you into thinking you're like, oh, I can have the, you know, have everything all at one time. That's just not really true. You know, I always say there's certain levels. There's like, am I willing to work at $100,000 level? That's a certain level of sacrifice. Then there's $500,000 level type sacrifice. Then there's, you know, $1 million level. Like I know for myself, I don't have $1 billion level sacrifice in me. Like the level that it would take. I was just watching the Steve Jobs movie. For me to get to $1 billion, the level of sacrifice, I don't want to sacrifice that much. You have to acknowledge that you have to sacrifice something in order to get to certain levels. And you have to decide for yourself. I don't know what the number looks like for me, but I feel like I'm reaching it because I want to at least try to have kids. And I want to like settle in a little bit more because I mean, like if, you know, if I make like $1 million a year in business, typically I take home 30 or 40% of that, like as take home pay. And so I'm like, you know, 300,000 is good money, girl. I'm good. Like, you know, like I don't necessarily, you know, it'd be great to make 10 million, but if it means that I don't have kids for sure, I'm not willing to trade that in. Mm-hmm. And so just being very, you know, conscious about what that means.
Even just that, you know, you saying that you take in 30 to 40%, that adds a whole other layer of like realism to it, to the numbers, to like what you see when people say, you know, on my business, because I've gotten begrudgingly into that show, The Profit, with that guy who goes from business to business and like helping them. Like, it's just like how you were saying, like the numbers are like, I'm making good money, but the numbers aren't adding up. What's happening? I never see it. And he goes in and he is like a serial entrepreneur and he helps them. He helps them like look at their books and figure out what's and trim the fat and like get on their, you know, get on a good footing. And that's been eye opening for me to see that like you can be making good money, but you have to be realistic and not. It's just like you have to tell yourself, well, I'm making this much, but really I'm making this much. And you have to sort of adjust to live that lifestyle. Like you're not like if you were living your $500,000 lifestyle, that would be unfortunate. The budgetista would be baroque. The budgetista wouldn't have a new car.
I know. And honestly, the truth of the matter is I'm not even living like I venture to say I'm living closer to like a $50,000 lifestyle, if that. And that's something too.
Feel bad about myself.
No, but you know, but to me, that's not good because it's hard to break the what got you here is not what's going to keep you here or move you forward. And for me, I've been having a hard time. Remember, I was like, how many times did I tell you, Mason? I'm like, my car broke down again.
Enough for me to be like, come on now.
Exactly. And because I was, exactly. And it wasn't because I was trying to be cute. It was because I was stubbornly clinging on to the vehicle that brought me here. Like, right. But if I let that go, but that's what got me here. But that's what, you know, that's what helped to create the environment that I live in now as far as a successful business. I was afraid that if I move past that, that I was going to lose everything again and be broke back on the couch. It's like I couldn't let that go. And, you know, finally buying the car was like Tiffany. Like I bought it cash. It was like, I think I bought it for $22,500. And that didn't make a dent in my account. But paying for that, it was so hard because I was like, oh my God, $22,000 is so much money, Tiffany, what are you doing? Meanwhile, Mandy, like literally my personal bills are under $3,000 a month. my personal like rent, insurance, like all like the business, of course, is different. But for Tiffany, my like I live off less than I say about $2,500 a month is how much my bills cost me. So I don't like I'm like Tiffany, you don't buy yourself anything. Like I don't. And yeah, that's been a struggle. It's being like Tiffany. It's to the point where you're making choices that put you in harm's way. Your car breaks down in a random place. What are you going to do? You know, how is that beneficial? Spend the daggone money and get something that's not going to put you in danger. And so I love my car now. That I was like, ooh, it's all like, it's so crazy. I'm like, wait, does everybody have push to start? People are like, where have you been?
Oh, that's so amazing. Like your car, did it, you probably like, yeah. Do you have like a backward, like a rear camera now, like the camera where you can see when you're backing up? Oh, it's like you're discovering the 21st century.
Yo, I still, like, when I'm in the car with Superman, I still turn around and look. He's like, babe, there's a backup camera. I'm like, oh, there is. And it has park assist. I can't believe it.
Ooh,
like,
that's you, nice.
Yes. I mean, I'm telling you, it's fancy. It's what I call affordable luxury. I did my research because I'm like, I'm not looking for a Range Rover or whatever, but I wanted something that was nice. It was going to last me a long time. Mm-hmm. It only had like 11,000 miles on it. Even though like, you know, and of course I wasn't going to buy a brand new car because that's just a waste of money, for depreciation purposes. And so it's a 2015, like it was just well maintained. It's black on black. It's just, honestly, I love it in that it's so nice to get in a car and not be like, come on, baby, start for me. Come on, start for mama.
I am so happy for you. Actually, that's like the exact same thing. We didn't buy the same car, but we bought run the same price, same year, same mileage. Okay. Are we rubbing off on each other?
I feel like this is happening. I think
so. No. Well, you need to send a picture so I can put it on the website. I'm sure people want to see you in your hot ride.
I will.
All this talk about balancing, though, and like you said, you can't have it all. I feel like, and this, I'm gonna put this question as our next question because I feel like it's like a good representation of a lot of the questions that we get from people. This is not the only person who's asked this. And the gist of it is, if I can find it again, from a listener named Angela. She says, your podcast is wonderful from pack panties to politics with mom. Angela, now you're a loyal listener.
I forgot we talked about pack panties.
Honestly, I think it's nice that we forget what we talk about or else why we keep like the amount of personal details in this show. Oh, Lord. Pack panties to politics with mom. I'm doing well in my career and I've changed positions in my company every 2 to 3 years to climb the ladder. Respect. Do you have any suggestions on work-life balance that would include work, working out, family, social life, and volunteerism? Thank you in advance. So she wants to kill it at work, also have time to work out, have a family, a social life, and time to volunteer. When you figure that out, please let me know, and I will be your agent and I will make money off of you. That is a lot. The holy grail.
But I feel like you have better work-life balance than I do, because I'm like, you know, one, you know, you've been working out, planning this wedding, you know, working at work and killing it, because I sat next to your boss Nick at your wedding and they just sang your praises. And so how do you do it? How have you been managing?
Well, did I mention that the day after the wedding, I broke into uncontrollable sobs at a restaurant, like in front of my friends? No, I've managed it, I would say, by prioritizing. Well, for one thing, like working out, yes. Let me think. How have I done it? Because I don't feel like I've always been the greatest at balance. I think, well, one thing, I haven't been volunteering like I used to. Like, that's for sure. I've been giving money to causes, but I haven't been volunteering like I used to. And which makes me sad, because a lot of the people at the wedding that that you met and that have been my lifelong friends, I met doing volunteer relief after Hurricane Katrina 10 years ago. And that was such a huge impact on my life. And it's the reason, you know, traveling alone to Biloxi, Mississippi at, you know, 19 years old and volunteering with a bunch of strangers, that is like that gave me the courage to do pretty much everything I ever have done before that, traveling, moving to New York, meeting new people. And so I'd love to get back to volunteering. I'd love to feel the sense of, like when you were talking about the sense of service and like the mission and drive you have for your business and helping people, I crave for that feeling too. And I would say that my job gives me a little bit of satisfaction in that regard too, because being a personal finance reporter, I'm not like the budgetista level of giving people help and helping, but we are in service journalism. Like the stories that we write, the assignments I do always are like, how can we help people today in our little small way? So that is like my own, I guess it's like my way of cheating and doing a job that makes me feel like I'm giving back and like a job that I'm good at. And I am grateful for that. I was just talking to someone today about how like this, the fact that I get paid to write and to edit as my job and I can have a life, like that is the ultimate dream if you're a creative person, is to get paid doing what you like. So I feel a lot of happiness and gratitude, and that gratitude makes it possible for me to not mind working extra hard all the time. But certainly, I also think the fact that I had a long planning period for the wedding. We had another question from someone who wanted to talk about the planning period for the wedding. But I'm sure you guys were sick of me talking about it because this is a long engagement. And I think giving myself time and like starting early and doing making all the big decisions right away, like the venue, the photographer, the caterer, and getting that stuff out of the way, and then like slowly building up small details over time, definitely helped me like manage the wedding. So the wedding wasn't that huge a part of my life. It definitely became like my entire life the last month before the wedding. We were doing dance lessons. I was planning outfits with my sister. I was like planning, you know, guest lists and table assignments, all that crap at the end was insane. So the last month I haven't been the best balanced, which is why I think I had that sort of like emotional release after the wedding. But luckily that's not like the norm. And I think that's just because I give myself a lot of time. Like, and I've had to learn that too. I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned as I've gotten older is to, when you set goals, like don't be unrealistic, because if you set an unrealistic goal with an unrealistic timeline, all you're setting yourself up for is like disappointment and struggle. So I would say I do that with like weight loss a lot. And even with career goals, like how many times when I was like 20 did I say, well, by 30, I'm going to be a millionaire and I'm going to have written a book and I'm going to be like, you know, an executive, blah, blah, blah. And that's a crazy lofty goal. And, you know, you have to wake up every day and be like, so I'm not an executive. I'm not a millionaire yet. Like I'm doing everything wrong. You know, you're being too hard on yourself. And, the same thing with weight loss. You know, my whole life I've struggled with, my body and like losing weight. I was really obese as a child. And I would always do these things where I'd be like, well, I'm just going to go on a crash diet and I need to lose 40 pounds in the next like 3 months. And maybe that would work and maybe it wouldn't. If it did work, it wouldn't last. And if it didn't work, I'd just be beating myself up. So with the wedding, I knew I wanted to be healthy, but I was not killing myself to, you know, fit into any certain size dress or anything like that. I just wanted to be like a good balanced version of myself. So it's been like a work in progress, I would say. I am really happy that the wedding's over now, because while the wedding was happening, I was taking a lot less time for what I really want to do on my side time, which is to write a book. And I started writing. Yeah. I'm telling you guys, I told some people before, but I'm telling you guys now. I've been working on a novel probably since when was this? Christmas time. I started writing it in the airport in Chicago and I'm really excited about it. And, as the wedding kind of got crazy, I haven't touched this baby start to a book. I haven't touched it, and now I'm really excited to like have more time to dedicate to that. And as far as work goes, like I'm grateful to have the kind of job that, I mean, it's a startup and there's very few of us, so like I'm killing myself trying to get prepared so that I can like leave for 2 weeks, and that is really stressful. I'm sure you can relate. Like anytime, like the budgetista doesn't run without the budgetista. So if you want to take time off, right, you have to like do the work in advance or figure out what's going to happen. So that's been difficult, but at the end of the day, I work with great people and they understand the importance of, you know, time off and like, you know, that sort of balance. And that helps me too. So in a lot of ways it's like, yeah, I've taken conscious effort to like have a balanced life, but then I've also been fortunate to work for someone and for a company that isn't trying to run my life and, you know, work me into the ground, and that I get to do a job that I like doing. So I feel like those are two things that aren't necessarily in my control that I've been fortunate enough to be blessed with.
And I did an Ask the Expert because for the Literature Academy, every Sunday we do Ask the Expert. And last week's expert was, he talked about creating abundance and balance. And he said something that actually I thought was like really insightful. He said that people mistake balance, meaning that everything is hovering around, like you think about, like, you know, like one of those, like a ball on a string. And then the ball is in the middle always. That's what balance looks like. And he's like, no, sometimes balance is for the next month, I'm going to not do as much of, you know, I don't know, volunteering, but I'm going to work on my wedding this month. Mm-hmm. And then once it's over, I'm going to stop wedding stuff and I'm going to volunteer. And when the volunteering is a little slow, I'm going to stop that and work on Zumba. So I thought, like, you know what? I didn't think about that. He was like, you know, balance doesn't mean everything is hanging in this precarious position, in this perfect like alignment. No, it means that sometimes you're surging in one place, so meaning that you have to kind of save in another, you know? And so I'm like, oh, so it's more like, it's like working in things in harmony, that you might be a 10 someplace, so that means you're a 1 here, and that's okay. And then you're a 1, you know, in that same place where you were a 10, and now you're a 5 someplace else. And so just learning that all things don't have to happen at the same time, that, you know, because it just makes you crazy. And honestly, I've gotten so much better. Like when I was at your wedding, you know, I didn't really do that much budgetista work, because I've gotten so much better, which I was terrible at letting people do what I've hired them to do. I used to do everybody's job. I got it. Oh, I got it.
Yes. That's me.
You know, so
I can do it better. No, it's like, better. It's quicker if I just do it.
Exactly. You're right. I used to think that, like, I wouldn't do it like that. So I've learned to be like, well, if you want it a certain way, show them. And so what I've gotten good at is, I like Sierra was like the best hire that I could have ever gotten, because hiring her, she's hired other people who are equally as amazing. And so they're actually better than me at the thing that, you know, that I brought them on for. And so it allows me to relax, like, Tiffany, you don't have to worry about customer support anymore. I don't do my emails as much anymore, because, you know, I'll never make it to a Brown Ambition taping if it wasn't for Michelle.
I can tell when it's not you, though. I'm like, Tiffany wouldn't respond so politely. I can totally tell when it's not you. I'm like, hey, whoever you are, thanks.
Exactly. Because girl, I'll be like, wait, I'm supposed to take, you know? And so having folks like knowing that, like, I could enjoy, like, I honestly could say I enjoyed Savannah, and I checked in a little bit, but everything ran like a well-oiled machine. They didn't need me. You know, I'm more and more, I'm getting good at just doing Tiffany tasks. Like, okay, I'm the one who has to speak. You know, I'm the one who has to prepare the presentation, but I don't have to answer emails about, like, hey, are you free on Tuesday? No, let Michelle do that. I don't have to manage all the staff. No, that's what Sierra is for. I don't do the marketing piece, but we all get together. Like today I had like one-on-one calls with all the staff just to check in on them. So it's not like I'm just like leaving it like flapping in the wind. No, we're constantly in communication, but I've learned to, part of my balance is to learn to let other people do what I hired them for.
That's something, you know, that we've touched on in couples therapy, actually. I mentioned that we did like some premarital counseling. And by the way, I got a little text from my counselor saying, congratulations on the wedding. That was really surreal for me. but honestly, I got in this really bad habit of being like, well, I have to do everything. I have to do everything. I have to do this. I have to do that. I'm responsible for this and this and that. And, you know, I was sitting across from my, you know, Enrique, now my husband, and this therapist, and they were like, wait a second, who said you have to do everything? Have you thought about asking, you know, your partner for help, or letting him know when you need something? And I'm like, well, if he would just take too long, or he doesn't know how to do this, or blah, blah, blah. And not only am I hurting myself, but I'm hurting him. It's like a lack of trust. A lack of, trust, you know, you trust someone, but it's like a lack of like faith. And yes, maybe he won't cook the chicken perfectly and it might be a little crunchy, and like the, you know, the broccoli maybe not cooked all the way through if I let him cook dinner tonight. But like, geez, if I could save half an hour and eat some crunchy, hard broccoli, like that's okay. He feels good because he's helped. And I have, you know, have 45 minutes to tape a podcast. You know what I mean?
And we're so good for that. Like, oh, I got it. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah. And they're like, you know, before you got here, I actually brushed my teeth and like took baths on my, you know, like I'm able. I don't know why women think that men can't do anything. They're like, you know, before I got here, you know, I actually put on my clothes and tied my own shoes.
Sometimes that's hard to believe. Today I set out a fresh toothbrush for him. I'm like, I set you a toothbrush. And I was like, wait a second, who am I? He can find his own damn toothbrush. Yes. I'm like, do you really think he's not going to find a toothbrush? Well, I don't know. Exactly. Like, you have to check. I have to check. Even now, I'm not perfect. I have to check in with myself when I'm being a control freak. And I haven't mentioned the MVPs of the wedding. You know, it wasn't just me. My sister, God bless her, was everything. And my mother at the last, you know, the last month, my mother was like, Mandy, hi, I'm your mom. Why haven't you asked me to do anything? I don't understand. And she's retired. And I'm like, I don't know. I thought you were busy. She's like, doing what? I'm retired. she's like, dying for me to ask her to help her ask. Yeah. And
it's like the biggest day of her life. Like, weddings for your daughter are like the biggest day. Like, this, I've been waiting my whole life for this.
She's why like, am I not? I would love nothing more than to go to Hobby Lobby and pick out 39 floating candles for you because we need those. And the minute I started asking for help with the wedding and just gave people trusted, and especially the day of, when you really just need to focus on getting your head right, like my girls and my family really gave me that space. And so it's just a combination of things. And your support team, I would say, in my 20s, I really prioritized relationships and my career. And I'm really grateful because I've built up these great friendships, and the kind of friendships where when things do get out of balance, when work is taking over, or I may have a family, want to have kids, I'm not going to have to look around and feel alone. I'm not going to feel like there's not going to be anyone waiting for me or worrying about me or wanting to be around me and hang out with me when I come up for air from this, because I've taken the time to build those relationships. And that's why I was so emotional after the wedding is just feeling all that love and that those, you know, those friendships that I've been blessed with. And but that took work, and I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it to spend time and make things happen with your friends and build that foundation. And that just is, you know, it's just icing on everything else. It makes me happier. And so I definitely wouldn't discount the friendship side of things. A lot of times we focus a lot on the romantic, like, you know, build, you know, get a boo, get married. You want that, you want kids, but like friendships, man, I mean, I wouldn't be anywhere without my friends. And I encourage anyone out there, women, men, to cultivate those relationships so that you're not putting, you know, you're not depending on just that one person, or child for, you know, your relationship, your fulfillment in that way.
So much knowledge today. So much knowledge.
This is what you get when you ask us questions. Just like, where do we even start from? How have we ended? This has been really fun, though. I'm glad we took some time to answer some questions.
I feel like we should do it again. No, I like that. I feel like we have to have a lot of these in queue, because the questions are really insightful, and we're just happy that you guys want to ask us stuff, because, you know, who are we?
Brown, you know, ambition. Brown ambition.
Right, so, but, you know.
This will be it. I'm honeymooning on Friday.
I know. That's so crazy. It's so crazy to think, like, it's going to take me a while to, like, realize that you're married. Like, that's, like, when people have kids for the first time. I remember when it finally hit me that, my best friend Drina had a son. Like, meanwhile, by then he was like one, and he was in her stroller, and he said something like "mama," and I was like, "Yo, that's your son." She looked at me like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, all this time, you know, I've been treating it like there's this kid she always brings with her, like, but like, no, like that is that is the fruit of your loins. Like, I was like, oh my god, that is her son. It just takes a minute. Like, when I see my sister with her two kids.
Now you're a mom with two kids, man.
I know, yo, that is insane. But it's so cute to see them together, because her son is 1.5, and like he's the loud one, and the baby, she's a girl, she's the quiet one. And he, because he's always so loud, they're always teaching him, shh, be quiet around the baby, and whispering. So he thinks that the only way, I guess, to talk to the baby is whispering, but he doesn't speak yet because he's only 1.5. So whenever he peeks in the crib, he goes, and it's so cute. Like, you could tell he's trying to figure out what exactly she is. So, like, you know, because it's like, wait, she doesn't look like me because I'm big, but she doesn't look like my mom. And so, but he'll look at her hands and her feet and be like, wait, these things look familiar. Like, I have hands and feet. So he'll touch them and say, Wow. It is so cute. It's like, now I'm like, I want a baby.
Oh, the ovaries are lit.
Yes, lit, until he starts screaming acting crazy. And I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah. It is like life, man, life. I don't feel different, but I definitely feel there was something, something did definitely shift with the wedding where I definitely feel like, God, I have a lot to be grateful for. And life is good and it hasn't been that way all the time or like in a while, but I definitely feel a sense of like gravity and gratitude, just for everything, just for everything. And I feel a lot, and in that way, I feel like a little bit older, that I feel more, as I say, you get older and you feel more like love and self-appreciation. And that I can definitely feel those like blocks shifting into place, and it feels pretty damn good. But I will not rest until I write that book. That is my goal.
Good.
Let me, if you don't hear from me and if you don't hear me mention it in a while, I'll be like, Mandy, where's that book at though? But yeah, so, but until then, honeymoon first, book later. Maybe I'll write on the honeymoon. Who knows? Maybe I'll eat cheese all day in Italy. But by the time you guys hear this episode, I will be gone. So wish me bon voyage.
Bon voyage. So have an awesome, awesome trip. And I will speak with you soon.
Okay. Oh, I can't even go that high. I cannot.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.